Certified Financial Planner, Christopher Calandra, is an innovative, comprehensive, informative, and cutting-edge podcast that discusses financial topics ranging from personal finance, economics, politics, and personal growth. Simply Financial will cover intriguing and thought-provoking questions so that the listener can simply increase their financial IQ.
Thank you for joining me for episode number 6 of the Simply Financial podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Calandra. Today, we are going to do the first in what we expect will be a series called Everyday Americans. I am very fortunate in that in my personal and business life, I meet really fabulous people day in and day out. These are smart people, hardworking people, good citizens that I want to talk to, interview, find out about their successes, who their role models are, what's important to them, what their rules of money are, and have a great discussion. So this is the first time we're doing this. I think you're going to enjoy it. Today's guest is David Famiglietti of New Frontier Armory. He's the president of New Frontier Armory. As you'll see in a moment, I've known him since he was a teenager. I was so excited to have a chance to sit down with him and get his views on a whole range of topics. I think it's terrific. I hope you, the listener, will feel the same way. On today's podcast, I have a very special guest, David Famiglietti, president of the New Frontier Armory in North Las Vegas, Nevada. I've known David for 25 years, and I'm really excited about having this discussion with him. To begin with, David, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
So let's just get everybody to the beginning. So can you just tell me a little bit about you, where you are today with president of New Frontier Armory?
I own a pretty big firearms manufacturing company that has a retail store and a wholesale outlet as well. We're currently branching off into some metal finishing and other aspects of the industry, basically trying to do everything in one, taking raw materials all the way to a finished product to sales.
So you've tried to control your supply chain, right?
Yes, Chris. Over the years, we've had a lot of problems with our supply chain and different ups and downs in the industry and how we were affected and essentially losing quite a bit of profit over things that were out of our control. So we've, a little at a time, tried to bring as much as we can in-house, and it's worked out very well for us.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about this over the last couple of years, and I think it's fair to say your business is in the upper echelon of the firearms industry across the country, right? There's lots of mom and pop operations, but you are near the top in terms of metrics, right? Volume,
absolutely.
Sales,
our volume and productivity has gone from basically why we started to manufacture ourselves was to take care of our own demand, and we've kind of expanded that out, and we have about 300 companies that we do contract manufacturing for, which has helped us grow exponentially.
Great. So I've known you since, I think we were talking before we started recording, since you were 13, which I think makes me 22 when we first met. So it's been a long time. And maybe you could share with me, what did you learn about money growing up, including from family members? First off, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Waterbury, Connecticut.
And so what did you learn about money growing up?
I had a lot of really good role models. I don't think we were pretty well off as a family. My father did really well at work, but you wouldn't know, I don't think. Looking back at it, you can't really tell. I had a lot of good role models, a lot of really hard workers that went out and saved a lot. I learned probably to be overcautious when it came to money. I never was an overspender, even as a kid. I don't remember really, asking my parents for money or anything like that. If I wanted something, there was a way I had to earn it. And it was whether it was cutting grass for a family member or shoveling snow up and down the street or whatever it took to do that. I was taught a lot of good lessons. A big one was to never really take on debt, which is good and bad. Once I got into the business world, there's some really good ways to take on debt. And I've probably missed some opportunities because of that. But, that was a big one, was to try not to be in debt ever. Save for what you need. Live below your means. Little things like that.
Would you say your household was wealthy? Did you grow up in a 1% household? Or was it upper middle class, lower middle class? How would you describe it?
I guess at the time I'd say middle class when I was in that age.
Okay. Now, you got this entrepreneurial sense about yourself, right? Because you had your own business while you were still in high school. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
I did. I even had some of my high school teachers working for me.
Really?
I started a little landscaping business probably right around that time when I was about 12 years old. I got it official. My mother, being the rule follower, made me go down to the city and register it and pay taxes and the whole bit. So I was legit right out of the gate. But we did. I had a little business, a couple of my neighbors, and we'd go around and cut grass and shovel snow and that type of thing. Learned a lot of lessons from that, and I was lucky to have a lot of people around me to kind of help me through that stuff. But I've kind of always had a thing for doing it myself or doing it better or looking at something and how could I do that and make money? How could I do that and make more money than they are? How could I weasel my way into this or that deal? So,
now, I asked a question about money, but let's just dovetail that with the work ethic, because you have an incredible work ethic. Did you get that from your parents, your grandparents? Was it just the community you grew up in?
I think my family, and I didn't just do the landscaping business. I've always had like two or three jobs my whole life, since I can remember, since before high school. I've always kept two jobs. I worked at Sears and did the landscaping business a little bit. I worked at two garages part-time back home when I was a kid after school. And I learned from all of them. The two of the garages I worked in, the two guys that owned them are still very good friends of mine, very good family friends to this day, and probably two of my strongest mentors. And they just both were total opposites, but I learned a lot from both of them. They both had their own styles, but they both taught some really good lessons, and I learned a lot about different things from both of them. And work ethic was always the key. Unfortunately, I don't see it as much now with some of the younger kids I'm hiring, but back then, that was, I guess, early 90s, mid-90s, that was what you were worth, is what you could put out.
Right.
If you couldn't do or couldn't perform or weren't fast enough or good enough, you weren't anything. So there wasn't a motivation for money. It wasn't like a prize or a trophy or money. It was, I want to show them that I can do this that fast, or I can wheel this wheelbarrow back and forth 100 times without stopping or whatever. That was kind of an internal goal, I think, that, you know, like I said, I'd probably learned from those guys, was just showing some hard work.
So you worked in Bobby's shop?
I did.
I did not know that. Okay. So then, in today's world where there's such an emphasis on graduating from high school and going to college, the importance of the college degree, you took, based on today's rules, a little bit of an unconventional path, because you joined the U.S. Air Force.
I did. I had, I guess I had three choices, but the two choices without my family disowning me was join the service or go to college. And I wasn't the type. I'm still not the type. It took me 9 years to finally finish my degree while I was in the military after I started.
So you're not a great student?
I'm not a very good student, Chris. I never was. I'm very smart, I think. I don't want to toot my own horn, but I think I'm pretty smart. But I'm not one to sit behind a desk all day. I like to do with my hands. I like to learn by doing. I like to learn by making mistakes. And I wasn't a good student. So I was the kid disrupting the class for all the other kids that were really trying to learn. So I didn't think I could go straight into college from high school. I don't think I was mature enough, to be honest. I was mature beyond my years in many ways, but in that, I probably couldn't have done it. I would have ended up back home or kicked out or whatever. And so I definitely, looking back at it, I definitely made the right choice, and I headed for the Air Force.
So how many years did you serve?
I was in the Air Force for 15 years before I got out.
Okay. And so we're going to get into you starting your business in a little bit, but tell me a little bit about your experience in the service. You served overseas, you served during wartime, right? So tell me about that experience.
It was really good. Like they say, you get to travel all over the place. I was really lucky with my travel assignments. We were kind of winding down from Bosnia and Macedonia when I first came in, and I ended up in Guam. And I lived in Guam for a year and a half and traveled all over the Pacific, traveled to Japan, Korea, a lot of the islands, and did a lot of work there. I was a civil engineer, so I did construction work, which I was kind of used to doing from growing up. And I was really good at it. Growing up, you know, like I said, my mentors, and another big one was my grandfather, and he was really hard on me. And I had no idea I was so good at a lot of the stuff I was good at. You know, he was a jack of all trades, and he taught me enough to get in trouble and all of it. And it never dawned on me that I was that good, because no matter how good I did for him, he always wanted me to do better. And, you know, he was really old school, so it was a negative
taskmaster.
It was a negative motivation type of thing. Like, why isn't this little thing done, even though 99% of it was perfect? So he taught me a lot more than I realized. So when I got in the Air Force, I was way ahead skills-wise compared to some of the other people I was working with. So it got me in a lot of trouble, too, because I was run circles around my bosses when it came to, you know, actual job skill and stuff like that for a couple of years at the beginning. But it all evened out, and, you know, I found some really good mentors there. I learned a lot about accountability. I had a lot of free-for-all, I guess, when I was a kid. I had a lot of leverage because I was pretty, you know, overall I was a pretty good kid and worked a lot, got to kind of do what I wanted to do. And I never really had to be... I never had to stop and listen to nonstop orders. So that was a learning experience for me. I also had to do some budgeting. I was making a lot more money as an 18-year-old cutting lawns than I was once I got in the military. My pay was drastically cut. So, you know, we did a lot of volunteer work on the side. And at the same time, I made time to do some side businesses. When I was in Guam, I poured concrete for people and did some work on the side when I wanted some extra money for a car or this or that that I couldn't afford. In Germany, I had a big firewood business where we'd split firewood and deliver it all around town because I couldn't find anybody to sell firewood for my house.
Okay.
So we started a little business there, but learned a lot while I was in the military for sure.
So we're going to get to when you got out of the Air Force, you started this business which has grown and been successful. In the military, were there any particular business skills that have helped you in your entrepreneurial career once you got out of the service?
I want to say, you know, I'm a big advocate. A lot of people intermingle management and leadership, and there's definitely both of that in the military too, and there's good and bad on both parts. I would say I learned a lot of leadership skills, and I think half of it I learned from horrible leaders, and I learned how to be a better leader because I didn't want to be like them. And then half of them, I really did have some great, great, great supervisors and mentors in the military. And I learned a lot about leading people. And it was a little easier in there because they don't have a choice but to listen to you. But you can get a lot more out of some guys, you know, treating them the right way. And I brought some of what I learned from my mentors at home and brought that to the military. And we kind of intermingled all that. And I think if I had to say the one thing that I really took out of the military was I definitely got to grow my leadership skills. You know, I never got to supervise people before and stuff like that. And by the time I was getting out, we were running projects with 40 to 60 people under me on a couple multi-million dollar projects.
Okay.
And so I really got to learn a lot about managing and leading people.
So I know your mom and dad as well. And one of the things I've always been impressed with your dad is his ability to have people be loyal to him, to be good team members, to be good followers, to be good employees, to be good partners, so on. But he was always able to have people to be loyal to him. And you, I think, got that character trait, I think in a very different way. But why do you think that is? I mean, in your business, you're surrounded by a lot of really good, high-quality people that seem to really look out for you. And, of course, there's always stuff that comes up. But by and large, you're surrounded with yourself with people that are tremendously loyal to you. Where does that knack come from? What's that skill?
I think a lot of that goes way back to where I grew up. Just old-school Italian neighborhood. Your name was everything. Your name, your word, that was all that you had. Nothing else mattered. You
right.
just assumed back, you know, like I said, even kids my age that I grew up with that were all hustling and working, you just assumed that if you had somebody to do a task or do a job, they were going to do it the best they could and they were going to do a good job. And it went past that. If you didn't make good on your word, it got around fast. Like, we lived in a really
sure.
small, everybody was either related to everybody or knew everybody or whatever. And I learned that really quick. A lot of that's from my grandfather. I remember just watching him. You know, he'd treat everybody I knew, anybody we knew, he would do anything for. He would stop what he was doing to fix somebody else's lawnmower, fix somebody's car, go bail somebody out of something or other, whatever trouble they were in. He would do anything he could do to fix them, a lot of times putting his own stuff, you know, to the back burner. And I learned that was more important. But guys were loyal to him. If he needed
right.
something, it was the drop of a hat.
So,
matter of fact, to the point where I can still, there's an auto parts store in Waterbury that I can walk into today on Baldwin Street and go in and walk right into the back room, into the office, sit down and get a hug from the owner, And if I needed something, and I said, I need a can of paint, or I need a bulb for this or whatever, oh, get out of here. Your money's no good. You're Johnny Moffo's grandson.
Mm-hmm.
So all in all, like, it paid off. People understood, you know, what they got from him or whatever. So
right.
I just thought that was always very important. If you take care of people, you can earn their loyalty, and then hopefully, for the most part, they're looking out for you when you're not looking.
But that would make more sense to me if you stayed in Waterbury, where your parents grew up, where your grandparents grew up, where you had this extended family and this extended community. But you ended up in Las Vegas after the Air Force, and you built this community where you are loyal to your employees and your network, and they are in turn very loyal to you. How did you create that environment when you didn't grow up here?
It's different for some people. I think it's something good that I brought to my little circle here. A lot of my circle is still folks that I was in the military with that either, you know, got out here and got a job or are working for me now or started their own businesses, and we're all family now, really.
Right.
A lot of these folks I've known for 10 or 15 years, and it was new to some of them. Some of them, you know, there was always a couple that thought there was some ulterior motive, like, well, wait a minute, why are you doing this for me? Why are you buying me this, or why are you helping me with this, or why did you offer me to help, you know? I just think it's the right thing to do, and I think once they got a hold of that and they see how one hand washes the other and the whole bit and how it works, I think they've kind of bought into it now to the point where they take it to their circles. So I think, like I said, it's probably not the normal place for it because it's a very transient town and it's a lot of implants in this town, but it's worked and it's helped me get where I've got.
So you treat people very, very well, and I see that, how you treat your friends, your coworkers, and other business acquaintances you have. You think that's in short supply today?
It is, unfortunately. I wouldn't say it's an industry thing, but it is. It's just I happen to be focused on this industry, but I see it a lot. I try to work together with companies. Even my customers, I try to explain to them, it's a two-way street. We need to make money. There's no secrets about it. Like, I shock a lot of my vendors because I can go to one of my vendors and say, like, let's cut the BS. Let's get right to it. What do you got to make off this thing? I know. Just tell me how much it costs you to make it. Tell me what you have to make off it, and I'll tell you where I could pay and what I could sell it for. We understand, like, if we're all sitting at this table, it's not a secret that you're selling me something and you have to make money. I understand that. And I appreciate that, and I'm going to help you make money by selling more of your things, you know? A lot of people just, they're like really guarded, and they don't want to work together with anybody. They want to do their thing. So they want to sell widgets, and they don't care if I make money or not. And there's a lot of people I know that want to buy widgets, and they don't care if the people they're buying them from make money or not. That's not a good business plan to me. If I'm draining you, and I'm, you know, sucking you dry on a contract, and you're going to make these things day and night for me, and you're only making 10 cents a day, that plan doesn't do me any good in a week when you go out of business.
Yeah.
I want to make sure you're happy,
right,
which will keep you loyal.
You can't build your business around me not being in business.
You can't have the instability. So
sure.
To me, I feel like everybody should come to the table, work out a plan where everybody can win, and go from there. So yeah, I think I bring something that a lot of companies and management that I've worked with in our industry and in this town, I think they don't bring to the table, and it's a shame because I think a lot more places and companies can work together a lot better, do even better than they're doing now if they could learn to give in a little bit and help each other out.
Switching gears a little bit, so now you're a successful business person, 38, you have your own family now. As we talked about, we knew each other, we were much younger when we first met. So what are the money rules that you have? And I think you've taken some of what you got from previous generations, but I think you've updated them based on today's world that we find ourselves in. So could you talk about some of your rules for money?
My three big ones, and you're right, like a lot of it does come from just lessons that I learned as a kid. A lot of them I didn't like when I was a kid, but looking back at them now, they truly paid off. Like I said, I was forced to start saving money at, you know, 12 or 13 years old, and it's really paid off. The biggest one for me is live below your means. This town is horrible for it. There's a lot of guys that are rich for a week and then they're living on the street or pretty close to it, you know, week to week. I think that's a huge thing. You can have big eyes and you can have goals for whatever you want, and you'll get there. If you really want something, you'll figure out how to get there. but I think living below your means isn't a horrible thing. Like, I'm not saying live on a cardboard box like a pauper, but you could, you know, you don't have to have things that you can't afford.
Okay.
Right away.
So that's number one.
That's number one. I think always having a goal for some type of savings or even spending, having some type of goal to reach should keep you motivated. If it doesn't, then you don't really need whatever that is. So, like, I always have some goal in mind, whatever my next thing is. Well, I want a certain type of hunting property or this or that. And I'll go after that for a while, and I'll see if it fades out or not. Do I really want it? Because if I do, I'll save for it. And I'll figure out how to earn more to afford it and kind of set towards it. So I think there was years, I think a lot of them were when I was in the military, I was just kind of, I went on cruise control because somebody was telling me what to do every day. I didn't have to make a lot of choices. I didn't really look forward. I was young and crazy, and we were having a good time. We were traveling all over the world. Lived in Pacific, lived in Europe. I got to travel all over. I didn't care. Like, my goal was wake up tomorrow and make it to work, you know? So I can tell a huge difference in how I saved money and how successful I was at what I did and how driven I was to do what I do by if I had a goal or not. So I would say, like, setting goals is very important. And that kind of goes along. It's doubled up with the impulse buying thing. Like I said, it always gives me time to decide, like, is that something I really, really want?
Sure.
Like, let's see how long this lasts. If I'm still motivated in a month to keep saving for this thing that I want, even if I could afford to buy it now, then I really do want it. But it might fizzle out. And I've saved myself a lot of money, you know. The third thing is a little rule that I've always had. My father kind of imposed on me.
Imposed?
Yeah, I listened to my parents. They gave me a lot of advice. Most of it was good. I didn't like a lot of it, but like I said, now that I'm a dad and I'm looking back and I want the best for my kids, I'm going to teach them the same stuff. So one of the rules my dad always had was anytime you came into something extra, you didn't have it yesterday, so you don't need it today. So he would teach me to save half of it. So if I got a raise, if I got a $5 a week raise, whatever, $250 a week got added to whatever I was automatically saving. That and pulling the money directly out of my checks. You know, I would do an allotment to my savings account or an allotment to a mutual fund or anything else. And it was always a really good rule because at the end of the day, like he said, you didn't have that money yesterday. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow you will, but if you just take half of it, you're still getting a raise and it's still more than you had yesterday and you lived just fine yesterday. Yesterday I was happy. So why do I need this other money today? But here, take a little bit as a little motivator to keep going, right? But then you're also saving a little more. So I thought that was always, that was probably how I saved the most money during my military career, you know, before I started my own business.
All right, so the three rules were live below your means, have goals, and then a subsection of that is to make sure that they're actually goals that you want and are worthy of saving using money for.
Give it some time.
And then lastly is when you have an increase in pay or wealth or income, or you come into money, to take some of that and put it away for your future.
Before you
save
it,
invest it.
I've always been a fan of, like, hiding it from myself. Take it away before I have a chance to decide if I should do something with it or not. You know, not that I'm irresponsible with my money, but it's very easy to let it get away from you and start living above your means.
So have your views on money, including these three rules we just talked about, have they changed over the years?
The rules still stand, and I think they always will. I think they're pretty good rules, and they've kept me on course for a long time. I think where things have changed, obviously, since I was 13, the numbers have gotten a little bigger. We've added some zeros. Past that, my goals have changed a little bit to where money isn't the end-all, be-all for me, but what it will get me is. I never really focused on the what to do once I got all this money. I always had a plan, and I've always had a goal. The goal has changed. I remember having a goal of, you know, $1 million in a retirement account. That's not going to cut it anymore. You know, my tastes have changed. What I want out of retirement has changed. So my goal is a little higher than that now. The money goal has always been there, the dollar amount. But I never really focused on after that and my time and the value of my time and how much I would love to buy some of my time back. So now I'm focused on, okay, I can make an extra XYZ dollars. I can make an extra $10 this week. But if it costs me an hour of my time, I'm not willing to do it. That $10 isn't as important as my hour of time. I value my time now where I never did before. I probably value my time very high now.
So when you were younger and you were growing your business, you were more focused on work incredibly hard and that would lead to better results financially. And now you still work incredibly hard, but I think you want to work smarter and you're more appreciative of working less and being more efficient because time is much more valuable than in your 20s.
Definitely. I learned from an old family friend to, you know, I schedule phone calls now. I schedule emails and I schedule conferences. I schedule my meetings. And I try to make the most of my day because I've learned, you know, there's years where I worked my 40 hours in the Air Force here doing construction, and then I'd work on my business for another 80 that week. Like, I'd go crazy and just work. And sometimes it's just not worth the payout in the end. My time is worth a lot of money.
So when you got out of the United States Air Force, you were how old?
I was 32 years old.
And so you started a business, and it's the classic American success story, right? Tell us a little bit about that. You didn't have a lot of money to start this business with?
No, I found a gap. I'm really involved in the firearms and hunting industry, even before I had the business. You know, it's just what my passion has been for a long time, and it's what I really like to do. And I noticed there was a real gap in this town. There was a couple real long-standing stores for 20, 30 years, and nobody seemed happy. The customers didn't seem happy. The people running the stores didn't seem happy. So I kind of saw a niche there, and I decided that was something that I should get into because it's something I really like to do. I had no idea it was going to be what it is today, I'll be totally honest. The goals for my company have literally changed every 6 months since the day I opened. But yeah, I started it probably at a pretty good time to do it, right before a lot of the political panicking and buying in our industry. And I had a credit card with a $4,000 limit. We didn't make a whole lot, you know, in the military, so I didn't have huge credit cards or anything to use. But I had a credit card, and I ran out all $4,000 of that credit card to buy a little bit of inventory and put a month's rent down on a commercial spot. And I planned on running it almost like as a clubhouse or a buyer's group type of thing, or a social club type of deal, where I would do everything for like friends and family at a small markup just to make ends meet and keep it going. And I quickly learned that the demand was definitely there for another shop, and I grew it rapidly since then.
Very good. And so did you take on a lot of risk in the early days of your business?
I did. Like I said, I gave up a ton of time. I was working pretty much around the clock. I would get off last couple months that I was opening the business while I was in the military. I would get off work at 4 in the afternoon. I could be there by 4:20, and I'd probably stay till 2 to 3 in the morning on average.
So you just work like an animal early
on. Nonstop.
So that was the risk of your time? But
so I invested all of my time for the first year or two, basically maxed out all my credit cards over time, and never took a dime more than I needed to pay bills out of the business. Still really haven't to this day. I'm just starting to now. I maxed everything out I had. Kind of just all my time, everything wrapped up in it, and it had to do good. And I think that's part of the reason why I have been successful is because I had to work to get it.
So 5 years into it, would you say you were more risky than you were in the early days, or less risk? More risk or less risk?
Definitely more monetary risk, for sure.
Okay.
I became a little more confident, too. Maybe not really to a fault, but I was getting close, you know.
Okay.
And I've kind of weaned off of that now. After another 5 years has gone by, I've kind of weaned off of that. And I'm taking a lot less risk now. A lot of it to do with the industry and just a lot of it to do with me growing up and having new goals and having a family now. And but yeah, I think at the five-year mark, I was at the point where, man, all these books I've read my whole life about, you got to have money to make money.
Yeah.
Now it makes sense. I have money. Let's make money. And I would roll the dice a lot. I get a lot of lectures from family and friends and whatever.
Okay. And that was a time, right, where you deviated a little bit from the core values you got because you were taking on more risk than probably your parents or your grandparents.
Definitely. I took on enough debt. When we opened the machine shop, I took on quite a bit of debt to purchase the building and purchase a lot of the equipment we needed to start up. And that went on for about 3 years. We just saw constant growth the more we did it. And it kind of reassured me to keep going, but it was definitely very, very risky because we put other divisions of the business at risk, you know, by spending, we dried up our cash flow basically for about 3 years, where my poor office manager, you know, was just nonstop juggling money to make sure everybody got paid on time, and would scold me and yell at me and at all hours of the night. But
so is your view on risk today as we sit different than it was at the very beginning and 5 years in and during that expansion you just spoke about?
It is. I'm a little less apt to take risk now for a couple of reasons. We're stable now. We're at the point in my company where I think we're pretty stable. I'm not seeking the growth that I was 5 years ago. So that's part of it. So I'm not reinvesting in a lot of equipment and stuff like that now. So a lot of that risk went away. And then honestly, a big part of it is since I've had my daughter, that's a huge part of it for me, is because, man, do I want to keep rolling this dice? Like, I got a pretty good thing here.
Yeah.
And I'm doing pretty good, and I take a nice paycheck home, and I get to spend, you know, I've cut back some of the hours I'm working here. I'm still working a full-time job for sure, and then some, because I do a lot of work at home and a lot of work anywhere I am. I'm constantly on my phone working. But I've been able to spend a lot more time with the baby, and that to me has made me really slow down when it comes to rolling the dice.
It changes you, right?
For sure.
So you are, I think, an older millennial, right? You're at the older edge of the millennials. So the millennials take a lot of incoming fire about their views on money and work and life in general. So what advice would you give to a younger millennial, especially an aspiring entrepreneur?
First of all, I don't like that title of millennial. We talked about that.
You resent that a little
bit? Yeah, I'm an old man in my skin. My soul was born in the 20s, I believe. But yeah, it's tough. They get a bad rap. I think kids born in the early 80s and the mid 80s still have a lot of the same ethics that I grew up in. I think it was a different time. I think it was a different time for their parents and their families and the cities we all grew up in. But I'm seeing it slipping, unfortunately. I hate to say that the stereotype is well-deserved, but it almost seems like it is. The more and more we get some younger guys in here, we're lucky that we've scored a bunch of really good young guys that are motivated, and luckily that they're family friends, and I think they were just raised a different way. They were raised the same way I was. But I think if I had to give them any advice, don't waste any time. If there's something you want to go after, do it young. I was just talking to a friend today about some real estate investments that I wish I got into when I was a little younger. And I'm starting to do the math now. And now that I can afford to do it and I have the time to do it, it kind of doesn't make sense in my plan anymore. If I had done it when I was a little bit younger, I could probably be a lot better off, you know, now. But I think go after something. If you want something, go start today, do some research and get started, do something. And then I think a big thing for that generation, and I guess it is my generation, but I honestly don't relate.
I'm not going
to
rub your nose in it, but it is your generation.
I don't relate to about three quarters of that generation, to be totally honest. But I see them going away from my debt-free rule. You know, there is sometimes where debt can be good. If you don't own a business, debt isn't good.
Yes,
it's bad.
No, but to be fair, you were not a consumer debt guy. You didn't borrow money to go on vacation.
No.
You didn't have a car that you couldn't afford. You weren't buying toys like quads or boats on credit. You did violate, if you will, I'm doing air quotes, the debt rule, but you used it to acquire assets to help your business grow. And that, some people may not like that, and some people would say that's not a good way to go about things, especially because of the riskiness. But that's a far cry from somebody that has $30,000 of credit card debt and nothing to show for it.
Mm-hmm.
My take with millennials is some of the criticism they get is fair, but it seems like there's a very large percentage of millennials that are amazing. They do work hard. They're very creative, and they have that youthful exuberance. And they may not have the same shared experiences that you and I and your parents and my parents have, but they're going to just be fine. But there's a big percentage, and probably an alarming percentage, that do not buy into that. And we're going to have to see how that plays itself out. But I know you have a lot of millennials here at the Armory. that are phenomenal.
I do. I got really lucky. Like I said, I've have really good employees, very loyal employees that are all really hard workers. And the ones that aren't, we engage and we make sure they turn into them. I think some of the problem with that generation is we're seeing a transition in the workforce that we were set up to fail at. I kind of think I'm lucky. I ended up getting a college degree while I was in the military. I did it on my own. And I almost didn't finish it because all I wanted to take was the business courses and the accounting courses. I didn't want to take my general ed stuff.
Okay.
So I let it linger, and it took me twice as long. I had to go back and take classes over that I'd already taken because my credits expired. I just had no need for that, you know? But I think my generation, including up till today, there's still this huge push for, you got to go to college. You go to college, you get a great job. And these kids are coming out of college and they're expecting somebody to hand them six figures. And it's not going to happen. That's not happening anymore.
I think that's a good point.
The economy's changed. The workforce has changed. We're bringing technology in to replace a lot of people. The skills that they really need, I don't think are getting taught as good anymore. I agree with that. The work ethic, the how to deal with people. I have a lot of trouble with younger kids that when I look at them in the eyes and say hello and put my hand out, and they're staring at the ground or staring at their phone or,
sure,
you know, how was your day? How was school? Isn't an answer for me. Like, I would have got whacked upside the head for that, and I want to do it to them so bad. This is not my place. But I think a lot of that was they're set up for these expectations, and they kind of get spoiled really quick. I'm not saying college is a bad thing. I think there's definitely some people that belong in college. They need to go to college. I think there's a lot more people that would be better off going to some type of trade school or tech school. I think what I would really love to see is colleges adapt to more programs and certifications than a traditional degree. Like, I would have been perfect to go to business school if it was just business school.
Maybe combined with some technical training.
Yeah, I would have had my master's, you know.
Yeah.
No problem. I don't want to take some of the other classes that I'm not interested in because it just doesn't apply.
As we kind of wrap up, and we'll have to go back and listen to the recording, but it seems to me you've used the term lucky maybe a dozen times in just our short little chat. So have you been lucky, or have you played by the rules, worked hard, been creative, study what you need to study in your business so that you could be successful? How much has luck played in your emergence as a successful small business owner?
I think like I said, I don't like to have a big head about things. I do at times, but I don't like it. And I think using luck as an excuse keeps me on an even keel, keeps me working
hard. So you
hard.
Use it to, like, for a humble.
I think I try. I try to stay pretty humble. I think some of it was luck, honestly. I think landing in a town like this that just happened to need something that I wanted to give and I was, you know, able to, I think that played a role in it. I think everything that's happened in my life, the people that I've surrounded myself with, some of that I fell into, and I think some of it is luck. I honestly do. I could tell you a lot more of it is a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication and a lot of really going after what you want.
So what would be your definition of luck?
Being in the right place at the right time, but at the same time having a skill or something that you can exploit that situation
with. Because I learned growing up, and it's always stuck with me, Earl Nightingale used a definition that luck is when opportunity meets preparedness. And I know it's a cliche. I'm sure you've heard of it. Why didn't you want to use it?
Because it's a cliche.
All right. But I think it's appropriate. I mean, there's lots of people that have been running around in Las Vegas, including in your industry, that didn't find the inefficiency, didn't find that there was this missing ingredient of what consumers wanted. And you capitalized on it. And I'm also convinced, having known you all these years, that if you were doing something else, you'd be successful at that too. And this is one of those things about luck and how you're raised, what you're made of, how smart you are. It's hard to judge how that all kind of comes together. But you've said lucky a lot, and I think you are lucky.
But
I know
right.
I'm lucky in my life, and
luck opens the door, and then you have to do something once you take this step.
There you go.
That's the way I see it.
So I think that's a good way to end. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It was as good as I had hoped it would be. And for listeners, if you want more information about ElliottWealth.com, about me, the team, you could visit the website at www.ElliottWealth.com. That's two L's, two T's. Please subscribe to this podcast. Pass it on to friends and family. I would be honored. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. And I look forward to doing another Simply Financial podcast very soon. Thank you.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of SagePoint Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against a loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. The information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of information provided at those websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to or your use of third-party technology. Websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of those websites, you assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the website you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through SagePoint Financial Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. Insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC are not affiliated with SagePoint.